Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And welcome to another edition of Coffee Cast with Cation. Mike Cation here with James Duckworth, who is our guest on the show today. And thank you to our sponsors, New Balance Tennis, for all of their help. Don't forget, you can also download the document. If you have any competitions that you do with your friends, be it Fortnite online, rock, paper, scissors, something as simple as that, basketball, whatever it might be, you can keep track of all of your stats by going and using the document. You can also exchange money through the document as well and download that today. We also have Patreon sponsors, Reese Lear and Lee Stanley, who will be receiving, if James is okay with it, an autograph ball from James Duckworth for their sponsorship and buying our coffee. We are at Starbucks today. I went with the peppermint cappuccino. I'm working my way down, James, from the lattes, the very Americanized lattes, to cappuccinos, to flat whites. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get better, but I'm a bit surprised. You were a very sweet thing with the caramel macchiato today.
I change it up quite a bit when I come to go to different coffee shops. I generally in Australia, I generally get a cappuccino. I like the little cafes we have there, and I prefer Australian coffee.
I don't blame you. I actually prefer Australian coffee too.
Yeah, but so I don't. I'll go the sweet option over here. Either a caramel macchiato or the mocha. It's not a bad, or mocha as you Americans say. not bad options.
All right, so I guess I wanted to start with some of your background from being in Australia. We're going to talk a little bit about the injuries and everything you've been going through over the last couple of years. How close were you to coming and playing collegiate tennis in the States at Tennessee?
I had a few college offers when I was, I think, around sort of 17, 18 years old, just as I was doing my final year of high school. I was a little bit sort of enticed just with one of my best mates, Jared Chaplin, went to Tennessee, and it was the idea sort of floated around that I could go with him, and it could have been pretty good fun. Since he went to college, I went and visited him a couple of times, and it's a great school there, great bunch of guys who were there, also great coaches, great facilities. So a part of me sort of wishes maybe I went for a little bit, but sort of at the time I was starting to do pretty well in the juniors, sort of made top 10 in the juniors, and I had a scholarship with the scholarship with the Australian Institute of Sport, and that scholarship pretty much covered all my costs for about 3 years, so that they would covered all my travel, all my flights, just taxis, train rides, all my accommodation, all my coaching, all my physio. So it was a pretty good scholarship, and I was sort of tracking pretty well at that stage. And we just decided, maybe just to go professional straight away probably was the better option. I don't regret the decision at all. But like I said, going and visiting a couple of times, college looked pretty cool, and especially the setup they had there at UT, I think it would have been, pretty fun to go to.
In that regard, and obviously it's probably changed for you over the last couple of years, do you feel like you missed out at all on some of the social aspects that come along with college, or even people who are not playing tennis at all, that early youth type of experience that you get to have at college?
Yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of the guys I grew up with at school, you know, were you know, sort of going out and going to parties sort of a lot more than what I got to do in those late-ish sort of teen years. You know, as a professional tennis player, you sort of have to sacrifice a few of those sort of things to get where you want to go in the sport. You know, the late nights, you know, aren't sort of really conducive to getting up and you know, training hard or you know, playing a tough tournament the next day or in the next couple of days. So yeah, it's something that I probably have sort of missed out on, but you know, I'm really happy with where my life sort of taken me, and you know, I wouldn't change anything.
So obviously, 5 surgeries over 2 years. You're now back and starting to play, obviously, at the level that I think you're happy with. A first challenger title in this comeback in Cary a few weeks ago. And I guess I'm wondering what kind of perspective you have right now when you have those big moments, when you have a rather negative one like you did on Saturday in Tiburon. How are you able to bounce back from those negatives a little bit better and maybe come down off the positives a little bit more? How are you mentally now versus where you were 2 years ago?
Look, you do have a different sort of perspective. You know, obviously on Saturday I had a tough loss to Michael Moe, who you know, is playing great tennis right now and just entered the top 100. So you know, he's a good player, but yeah, I was pretty disappointed with my performance. You know, didn't serve as well as what I would have liked. You know, a few things I could have done better. So yeah, I guess sort of in the past I would have sort of dwelled on that probably for far longer than what I should, and far longer than what would help me as a tennis player. It probably would drag out over, you know, sort of 2 or 3 days, and I would sort of be a bit down in the dumps. But yeah, after having you know, such a long period out of the game, and you know, times when I was out of the game where I was fearful that maybe I wouldn't be able to get back, maybe my body wouldn't let me get back. Like I said, it gives me a bit of perspective. I've lost that match. I was, you know, that night it was still tough. You know, just replaying different scenarios over in my head, coulda, woulda, shoulda. But you know, I sort of pinch myself and say, you know, look, you know, you're not at home. You're not having to go through another surgery. You're not going through hours and hours of rehab each day. You're not injured. So there's always next week in tennis. That's the beauty of tennis. There's always another tournament next week, another opportunity to get better. And you know, that's sort of the way I'm approaching it now. And I think that's probably better for my tennis and probably just my overall sort of mental well-being.
All right, so what were the things that you maybe took up, or what were some of the things that you did during those injury timeouts? And we were talking about it off the air last week, how it was kind of more fits and starts. You didn't have that prolonged, you knew you were going to be out for a full year. But what were some of the things that you appreciated more when being home, whether it be social aspects or, I don't know, playing Fortnite or something stupid like that?
Look, it was nice being home for a full football season. That was fun. You know, I'm being in both my AFL and my NRL. Went to a few games whilst I was home of those. We do a sort of a fantasy football in those as well, so I got right into that. I was lucky enough when I was home, about three months into my injury, I met a girl in Brisbane. She's my girlfriend, still my girlfriend now. She's put up with me for a long time. I'd never had a serious long-term girlfriend before, and it was something that, you know, me traveling constantly all the time, it was tough to sort of do. So to be home for an extended period of time, I was you know, I was able to just sort of get to know this girl and spend a lot of time with her and did a lot of things that maybe I wouldn't do until my tennis career was finished. We went on, you know, lots of different sort of holidays, up to Noosa near in the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. I'd never been to a concert before. We went to a couple of concerts, Chet Faker and Ed Sheeran concerts, which were awesome. We went on a holiday to America and to Mexico. Just doing regular sort of things that couples do. I guess it was something that I hadn't experienced before, and it was really nice to have someone who was sort of always there for me in those sort of tough times, and also the bonus of dating Madison is that she's also a doctor as well, so she was really able to understand everything that I was going through. She would come to a lot of my meetings and consultations with the different surgeons and physios whilst I was trying to get back and get better, and it was really nice having having someone there just always with me throughout those sort of tough times, to be able to to see at the end of the day and just chat with and go through my different experiences as with and have someone there for me. So that was nice.
And how's that transition been? Feel free to have some, go ahead. How's the transition been for both of you in terms of now that you're on a full schedule?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tougher. She hasn't experienced anything like, dating someone who's away quite a bit. With my injuries, I've sort of made a bit of a decision not to do any sort of massive stints overseas. I remember when I was 21, I did a year where I left home middle of Feb and got home at the start of October. Mm. Those sort of things probably aren't ideal for a relationship and also just with my body, getting home and doing little blocks here and there with my fitness trainer, with my physios, I think are the best thing for maintaining my health for an extended period of time. But it's definitely a little bit tougher, being away for, the longest I've been away from her has been 6 weeks at a time. She was able to come over to Wimbledon, which was nice. I think she really enjoyed that. It's a pretty cool tournament to go to. I don't know many people who don't enjoy it. And then she came over to here to the Winston-Salem and US Open. So that was nice. It's definitely a little bit tougher, but we're working through it. She's she follows my tennis. All through the night, even if I'm playing, 2 a.m. in the morning, she'll set alarms, and she enjoys listening to you.
Oh, good.
To your calls of the matches, it's nice with the live stream and tennis TV and the two events where she can actually also watch, and it's been nice.
I need you to explain to me AFL, because I know you're very passionate. You don't ever tweet, except when it comes to AFL, I believe. I think is that a no?
No. I love AFL, but okay. I'm more passionate about NRL.
Okay,
which is rugby.
Typical American. I mean, I can't even tell the difference.
Yeah, so that's rugby league. Tough to explain, but I'll do my best to. I assume you've never sort of really seen.
I went to an AFL match a few years ago. I went to AFL. I actually went and supported Gold Coast, which I understand is like the worst team to support.
Yeah. So yeah, I think they came. I reckon I think they came second last this year. So they're struggling. So do you want me to explain AFL or NRL?
Yeah, let's do it. I think most people are familiar with NRL just because it's a little bit more of a global sport. Yeah. The AFL part, it boggles my mind.
So I haven't grown up with AFL. I've just sort of watched it quite a lot in the last probably few years. I'm from Sydney, so it's not as popular there. But AFL, I'm not sure if it's... I couldn't tell you if it's 18 or 22 people on the field. It's something, either 18 or 22. And anyway, basically the goal is there's four posts at either end of the field. If you kick it through the middle two posts, you get 6 points. If you kick it through the outer two posts, you get 1 point. And to move the ball around, you have to either handball the ball. So where you lay the ball in one hand and you sort of hit it with your fist in the other hand, or you kick it. And if you are tackled holding the ball, you lose the ball.
Okay.
Basically you're just trying to get it through those goals. Without getting tackled and doing it more times than the other team. Yeah.
So there's a lot of fantasy involved, and I know yesterday you were watching NFL games. You seem like you're one of the most competitive human beings I think I've ever met. Is that accurate?
So yesterday, I'm still in a tight battle right now with a mate of mine, Jared Chaplin, this week in fantasy. I wasn't thrilled. Alex Collins, when Alex Collins yesterday had a fumble, which hurt my score a little bit. I love watching all sports, especially sort of ball sports, and I'm really competitive in everything I do. Yeah, fantasy football, obviously tennis, table tennis, snooker. Sort of anything I do, losing isn't super fun.
How does Madison adjust to that? I mean, I assume here in the States, it's putt-putt golf. That's like a common date occurrence. Is there something similar that you guys have done?
We don't usually... She's relatively competitive as well. So it never seems to go down too well if we compete in something. I won't really hold back. And then she'll be... usually she's on the losing end. She won't admit that. But...
Right.
If I win, it's never usually great. And then when I'm playing other than tennis, someone else in some sort of game, she's genuinely cheering for them.
Good.
Likes to see me lose.
I think that's completely normal, though, and especially for somebody who had to go through university and a doctor, that whole situation, they tend to be pretty competitive as well. So you obviously, the big storyline was against Andy Murray at the U.S. Open, and I know I expressed this to you. I was doing some of the radio call and just getting to tell your story. Tell me what you were telling me off the air last week about coming back, playing at the French, and then your next tournament, and this transition that you had to make. Because I'm being blunt here. I said that coming back from working at the U.S. Open to doing a challenger where the equipment's a little bit different and all that is really hard for me. Tell us about your experience at the French and then right afterwards.
Yeah, so it was awesome to get into that. I was the last in French. Got in and played, had a tough draw, played Cilic first round. After having such a long layoff, playing number three in the world first round wasn't an easy task, but it was a lot of fun. I've actually played pretty well after having such a long time out. I played on center court, Philippe Chatrier, awesome court. And it was yes, so cool to be back at the Grand Slams. It's where you want to be as a tennis player at those big four events, packed crowd and Philippe Chatrier, but even sort of little things, getting free meals, getting your hotel paid for, getting transport everywhere, that sort of thing. The next week I was entered in a future in Antalya in Turkey, and the contrast was pretty different. On the original acceptance list, I was actually two out of the main draw, so I went there and signed in for qualifying, but luckily none of the special exempts had been used, so I got into the main draw, and it was a completely different experience. The courts there were quite average. There were sort of holes and divots in most of them. One of the practice courts, the baseline had completely come up, so you were sort of just judging as best you could if the ball was long or not in practice. On quite a lot of the courts there were lots of chickens sort of in and around the courts. We were staying at this big sort of resort, and there were sort of chickens everywhere, making different noises and and whatnot during matches and practice. And you're out there with no ball boys, no linesmen, just four balls. Not one person watching. Made it to the final that week. It was myself, my opponent, and the ref was sitting there watching. That was sort of it. It was completely different to playing centre court Philip Chatrier. And
how'd you handle it? I mean, mentally, were you like able to stay locked in?
It was tough. I just sort of reminded myself at least you're not injured. At least you're not back home. You need to be here for a reason. You need to win these matches. But I'm not going to lie. It was a tough week, and hopefully I never have to do that again.
you've mentioned Jared Chaplin a couple times, and I think to some of those guys that you came up with, Chaps being one of them, Ben Mitchell, Luke Saville, you're seeing a lot of these younger Americans come up together. We've talked about Michael Moe a little bit, he with Francis Tiafo, Taylor Fritz, and the like. What's it like having that group that you're able to come up together with, that bond? And obviously, I don't even know what Ben Mitchell's doing right now, but Chaps is retired. Sav's obviously struggled a bit. What's it mean, though, to have that group, that core group, continuing moving forward as you're getting a little bit older now?
I think it's really nice to have a good group of players who you're also really good mates with, to sort of share different experiences with, to sort of help and push one another to be better. Us four, we're pretty close mates. We just had Chappers' wedding about a month ago back in Nashville, and we were Luke, Ben, Sav, and myself were all groomsmen there, and it's nice to have friends for life who know exactly what your job is and what you go through, and sort of are always there to sort of get advice from or bounce different ideas from. A lot of people, it is tough for a lot of people to understand the life of a tennis player and what it's like, and to have mates like that is pretty invaluable.
I think though, as you get a little bit older, Chaps is retired, and there's certainly the rankings issues, and that you're going to be potentially 85 and Sav might not be there. So how do you have to adapt in that regard, in terms of not having that close core, and you're having to adapt and adjust to newer people, newer friends, I imagine?
It's not as enjoyable when you can't sort of go to dinner each night and stay with your mates, because they're at different events. I still keep in contact with them all the time, and I'm still chatting with them all the time. I don't think you do go to different groups and different people that you hang out with, but I don't feel like they'll ever be sort of as close as those guys you spent so much time with, and you really get along and have that sort of bond that's going to sort of last a long time with.
I have to ask about Bernie. Picks up a title last week. Just kind of came out of nowhere, it seemed like. A challenger title about a month ago, and now an ATP title. Amongst players, the Aussie players, is there respect for him? Is there a dislike of Bernie? Because obviously from the outside, we might not have the right perspective. I did some of his matches at the Aussie Open this year, and it was just like, I can't really gather what do people think of him. But what do the players think of him?
Bernie's a different character. You can obviously see that on TV and, in his matches. I get on fine with Bernie. I've never had any issues with him. He's obviously had his different struggles throughout his career. He's obviously also an extremely talented player. He's got some serious ability, and when he sort of wants to and puts his mind to it, he can obviously be a great player, and he can win titles. I think it's just sort of really up to him and how much he wants it. Hopefully he really you know, can push forward and really, you know, climb up the rankings again for his sake.
Yeah, let me redirect this, though, because I said you're one of the most competitive human beings I've ever met. Do you understand it when Bernie or whomever says, you know, their heart's not necessarily in it? Is that something you can even comprehend?
Yeah, personally, it's not something that I've sort of had to deal with. Every time I sort of walk on the court, I want to win. I hate losing. I think winning is one of the best feelings ever. It's an awesome feeling. And pretty much every time I lose a match, I'm pretty upset, pretty shattered. I hate losing. So it's not something that. I just don't think it's my personality to just sort of accept losing, and I don't think that'll ever change. I think that sort of helps me a lot in matches, and it's something for me that's sort of tough to wrap my head around, I guess.
So in that regard, you've obviously, with all of these injuries over the last couple of years, you've been kind of faced with that athlete mortality in terms of this is not going to last forever. Have you found anything else to this point that will allow you to have that same competitive spirit when you get into, quote unquote, real life?
Yeah, post-tennis, I'm really not sure what I'm going to be doing. I have an interest in all sports. Whether or not it's tennis that I'm involved in later, I'm not sure. I've helped out bits and pieces at times at the National Academy that I train at, just which was with a lot of the younger players. Chatting to them a little bit about matches and their schedule and where they're going and that sort of stuff. So, maybe I could, go into the coaching path, but I'm really not sure right now. And
I mean, you're going to be like Leighton Hewitt. You're just going to keep playing until you're 62 years old.
I would love that. No, I'm not going to lie. I'd love that.
But you get it, right? Like, why these guys who are maybe 40 and so they need to keep playing or do keep competitive in some aspect, right?
Yeah. I can understand it. I'd love to play forever. Unfortunately, you can't. When I sort of get to that stage where it's probably looking like time to hang up the rackets, I think it'll be a pretty tough transition. It'd be such a difference in lifestyle. You won't have the same sort of adrenaline rush as walking onto, say a centre court Rod Laver Arena and that sort of thing. It'll be pretty different, and hopefully there's something else that I can sort of put my focus and my energies into that will give me the same sort of fulfillment, I guess, as tennis.
All right, we've got a couple minutes because I know you've got to hit in just a little bit, and I'll give you a ride if you don't have a rental car. I don't know. You've got a car. Okay. So, two things. First, I want to talk a little bit more seriously about this transition tour. We're coming very close now, about 3 months away from all the rankings changes that are going to take place, and this transition tour replacing the Futures circuit, if you will. Are you in support of this? Do you have questions about it? And also, how has the communication been so you have a good understanding of how the new rankings are going to take place?
Tough question. I guess we have to sort of wait and see how it goes, and that's when I'll sort of make a bit of more of a decision as to whether I support it or not. I have a decent understanding of it. There are still different parts that I'm unsure about. The biggest question that I've sort of asked a few different people, which I sort of can't really understand, is in a draw for a challenger next year, there's 37 direct entries. There's a few entries for transition players, and then there's a four, and there's a few wildcards, and there's a four format qualifying event, what I struggle to wrap my head around is that before these challenges, I only had ATP points and a point for I made a final of a future. That put me at about 400 in the world. Mm-hmm. My question was to the ATP was, if I'm 400 in the world and I am one or two out of a challenger, I then can't even play qualifying because there are guys with a transition ranking ranked ahead of mine. To me, that doesn't really make sense. If you're one or two out of main draw, yet you can't play qualifying, that's a bit of a strange one for me. Whether or not that sort of sorts itself out next year or not, I'm not sure, but that's my one sort of question. It'll be interesting having the 40A draw. I guess, you'd say in a fair few challenges in the year, at least a day or so usually is, I'd say maybe half the challenge throughout the year, at least a day or so is taken out with rain. Mm. So in order for that to work, it's going to be tough. I assume there'll be a lot of tournaments where players are playing two matches in one day. So it'll be interesting to see how everyone responds to that. I think it's good how they're trying to get more hospitality for everyone. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked into it as closely as what I could, but they're just a couple of my sort of questions I have at this stage. Yeah, I guess now you won't be having guys. Some guys you can get to sort of 150 primarily playing futures. Mm-hmm. If you're winning a bunch of 25Ks and just getting 27 points, the same as making semis of a challenger, really. So it'll stop that from sort of happening, I guess. And then maybe it's it puts more emphasis on getting to the really back end of challenges and
You and I, in 5 years that I've been covering you, we've never talked about your grandmother. And it's one of those, every time you're on a TV court, I hear that same old fact because it's still part of it. For people who don't know, tell us about your grandmother.
She was a great player. Won Australian Open back in 1955. Had a few hits with her in my time. I think my last one was probably when I was about 10. I don't know what else to do.
Is it nice hearing that every time you're on TV? Because I know you go back and watch your matches, but when you are on the TV court on tennis TV, it's maybe not as regular as you would like, but it's always there. It's always dropped in the first couple of games.
It's definitely something that's nice, and our family's super proud of.
Yeah.
Maybe she's given me a few of her genes. Winning Aussie Open, it'd be something that would be awesome one day. It's nice to have that sort of tennis history in the family. Yeah,
you got to be excited about getting back home for the Aussie summer, though, right?
Definitely. Favorite time of the year. Crowd there is awesome. Last Brisbane International, which I'm a little bit sad about, but I'm looking forward to playing there and Aussie Open. Hopefully it's main draw, but qualities is still good fun as well.
Well, James, thank you very much, and I hope the coffee was all right.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks. Thank you.
And again, you can support us as well by going to patreon.com/MikeCTennis. Again, all right, but thank you to New Balance Tennis, our big sponsor over the last couple of years of this coffee cast, and as well, thank you to our new sponsor, The Document. Keep track of all of your competitive stats with The Document, available at the App Store. We will have more podcasts and coffee casts later in the week, but for now, Mike Cation signing off. Coffee Cast with Cation.